Hi, everybody. Welcome back to season 3 of The Frontier of Finance. I'm James Rockwood, the founder and CEO of Capintel. I'm super excited to have Rob Cernkovic, our CRO, on the pod with us today.
I can't believe I'm here. This is pretty exciting. Tell me a little bit more about why I am here.
You know, we should probably start with like how we met. Give the viewers, now we have viewers, give them a bit of an idea. And then we can come into why you're in the chair today.
Okay. Are you going to take it?
Yeah, sure. So back in the day, probably 6-7 years ago, I sold a very large laundry and linen facility.
Right. As you do.
To a private equity firm. Didn't own it, to be clear. Was really interested to talk to the people on the other side and kind of stayed in touch with them. They were then thinking like, oh, it'd be kind of interesting if you worked with us. And I was like, no, I'm going to start a company.
Were you a real estate agent at the time or?
No, I was in investment banking.
Okay.
And so it was a whole business. It was really interesting. And so they just said like, hey, we should work together. And I said, I got this idea for this company. I'd love to, I can't. And he said, well, if you're going to start a business, you got to meet my buddy, Rob. And then you ghosted me for at least 16 months, I'm pretty
busy.
Sure.
I was a busy
Not
guy.
Like 16, pretty accurate, I think, is
I think
where
so.
It was. Yeah.
I think so.
But then eventually got to know you. We met, had a nice dinner at Patria in Toronto,
yep.
if I recall.
Yeah.
And
I paid for that dinner, I think, too.
Well, yeah, I hope so.
Nice.
Pretty sure we had zero revenue at the time.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's kind of
that's
a nice
fair.
Thing to do.
That's fair, yeah.
yeah, so we had that and then got to know you and then brought you on as an advisor. I think you helped us out with all of our growth the first like 3 years of kind of when we went from, I remember I probably still have that Excel file of like pricing.
Oh, back. Right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. When you kind of introduced us and like, we're like, this is how pricing works.
Yeah.
And this is how you sell software.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then guided me through all of our growth from like no dollars to about 15% market share in Canada. And now you're our CRO.
Yeah, good run.
Long run.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, tell me about what you did last season.
So Frontier Finance is a long running podcast. It's come in many different
season
formats.
Season 3.
Season 3. It's technically season 4, but okay. That's okay. And we ended up running into, it was like 2 seasons of just, during the pandemic, we wanted to try to get some content out there, and we thought there was a need for people to talk about new investment products because there's a lot of really interesting things going on with wealth and asset management right now that have a huge impact on everybody.
Yeah.
You know, wealth and asset management, I think, underpin most of life's goals. You consider whether you want to, you know, buy a house, you want to have a family, you want to retire, you want to have a cottage, you want to buy a car, like whatever it is, a lot of those big milestones in life are underpinned by financial goals. And so everything that we can do to make that industry better, everything we can do to inform people more about what's available to them, I think has a direct impact on the lives of millions of people, which is really cool. And I think a big part of why I'm excited to be at Capintel. And a big part of that was, let's start to talk about all these new products that get launched. Because all these new funds get launched, all these new products get launched, they have really interesting stories. There's something deeper than just a name and like a US equity strategy. And so trying to help explain like, why is that different? And also trying to help explain the backstory and to make it tangible for people was really important. So the first few seasons of The Frontier was just talking to portfolio managers about the investments that they've created, these new funds that they've launched, how a financial advisor could use them, a bit of the backstory. And then we started to pick up these really interesting overall trends. And we'd be at conferences, as you know, that we've been to across North America, and you found that what we were talking about was really kind of turning heads around some of the trends in asset management, specifically a huge trend towards making more private companies investable. So finding ways that regular people who are not accredited investors can invest in these private companies has been a huge trend as an example. And so we thought, there are also big trends in wealth management that have huge impacts on people. And so let's cover both of those in a new format with video and this nice studio and be able to bring this to a wider audience.
Yeah, it's funny because like my career for the last 10 years has been really focused on financial services. But the wealth and asset management industry are incredibly nuanced and specific. So what I've found is, like, as I've been out in the field talking to people, being able to speak the language of financial services is a lot different than being able to speak the language of wealth and asset management. So I've tuned into a couple episodes. So I guess from your perspective, what are you hoping that we do differently this season from the last ones?
Yeah, I think before it was more of like a technical overview of just the products for like a really niche audience of financial advisors using it to work with their customers.
Yeah.
And now I think we're trying to bring a lot of this information to a broader audience. You know, what we've heard is that a wider education, as well as to drift into wealth management too, not just this is the product, this is the format, go to the next one. I think trying to have broader discussions. We'll have some product specific discussions going on, but I think trying to have broader discussions around trends in wealth and asset management for the industry and for regular folks to consume is going to be a big part of what we're doing this season. That'll be different and elevated from what's happened in the past.
Yeah, I feel like for me, the last couple seasons, what's been interesting is it's relatively consistent the types of products people are building.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're launching into the market. So understanding like why they're doing it and what's trending has been good for me. I think for me, because I'm out seeing so many customers and talking to so many executives across asset and wealth management, in addition to the product stuff, I'm hoping to get a little bit more around what people are seeing from like practice management, what they're hearing from clients. Like we've been doing a bunch of our own research with Vivaldi and stuff, like what research that they're getting. Understanding even like what's happening from the advisor perspective, because it's so freaking competitive out there right now, like how people are trying to like recruit advisors and bring them in. Is it MA? Like where does organic fit into that? So I'm excited to have a bit of a wide breadth of people coming in and just kind of pick their brains and figure out if they're on the right frontier, if we're they want to join our frontier and check out all the different frontiers.
You know, well, that's I think why we're calling it the frontier of finance.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Make sure we're on the bleeding edge of what's happening.
right.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really exciting, and as well, trying to find new ways to bring these products to life for people. We said this before, but wealth and asset management ultimately, what you buy as a consumer is intangible.
Yeah.
Right. It's an investment management, or it's a fund. It's something that you're never really going to be able to see. But for a moment, when you're making a decision, it needs to become tangible. And so I think both at Capintel, what we do, as well as here on the frontier, we're going to have an opportunity to try to help make these products really tangible and make this experience more tangible for consumers so they can feel more confident in what they're ultimately investing in and they're betting their financial goals on. I think that's a really important part to continue to bring this back to is like so many of life's goals are wealth goals. Some of your life's goals can't be decoupled from wealth goals. And it's something people think about all the time. And I think that's a really important message to send across where people need to think about, how am I going to feel the most secure in this? How am I going to make sure that I feel confident in my financial future? And as technology providers and in this format, I think we have an opportunity to really make that work for people and make them really feel like they can touch these products more than they've ever been able to before.
Are you thinking same audience, same folks would be listening and getting value out of the podcast, or are you thinking about a wider swath?
Yeah, I think we want to go to a wider group of people. So not just financial professionals trying to find out about a specific product. I think getting into practice management for financial advisors, trying to give retail investors as well a lens in on how this industry works, so they can start to understand the products a little bit deeper and start to understand the approach a little bit deeper. Practice management for financial advisor side. And then also if you think about from the asset management side is also helping them tell their story. Because there's some really fascinating, when you dig in, there's some really fascinating stories going on that I think people would find to be incredibly beneficial if they knew about prior to like investing in a product and betting their house on it or betting their retirement on it or betting sending their kids to college.
Are you thinking about doing anything provocative?
It gets people going.
Yeah. Should wind them up.
We'll see. I guess that'll be the moment. We have a large list of confirmed guests, which is amazing, from huge and influential firms, which I think is really cool. People who manage hundreds of billions of dollars, which will be really, really interesting. And so, yeah, we can get them fired up. I think that's, we'd be remiss if we didn't. So
nice. Okay. What about, do you want to tell me a little bit about, or tell folks about Cap and Tell maybe, and how that fits into this?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So at Cap and Tell, our mission is to elevate finance to build wealth for all. And so what that means is if we can make the investment and wealth management industries better for consumers, then ultimately they're going to feel more confident in their financial future. And so we go back to an earlier point, wealth and asset management is intangible. The products that you buy, what you bet your future on, what you bet your life goals on, something you're never going to be able to touch. And our goal as a tech provider is to help financial advisors and asset managers tell their story,
right,
and connect it to why it matters for that customer and why they want to make that investment and bet their financial goals and their life goals with this particular portfolio or this particular product. And so it really is the mission of this podcast as well, to be able to sort of shed light on that and make it make a bit more sense and make people feel a bit better about the whole process individually.
Yeah, I think that's cool, because I think at least from my perspective, a lot of the research and a lot of things that we're hearing from customers when we're talking to them every day is that trust, such a big thing, right? You want to drive confidence, but a big barrier to that is trust. And I know for me, the story means so much, right? Like the journey is almost as important as the destination. And so if the advisors and the wholesalers can't, like if they're only showing you the destination and not taking, like you spend so much time with them, like mm-hmm. building the journey, like they've got to really take you on that story. And that's cool. I'm actually excited to hear a bunch of that too, so I can kind of work it into my my pitch and my talk track and just get smarter on the industry too.
Yeah, and congrats on a lot of the guests you've been able to land for this. I know it's been a huge effort from your team, and we've got some like incredibly exciting people that are coming on down the future. So I think we're gonna have
it's like my side gig, selling software and booking guests for the frontier of finance.
Beneficial for sure.
Totally. I feel like they're analogous. I'm glad we sell more software than bookcasts, but that's all right.
It's all related.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then I guess going into Capital, like we could talk a bit about how it started. And then I'd love to kind of talk a bit about why you joined. And I think a bit of your history too is background. You've kind of touched on a little bit, but a bit more, I think, just to build the context for people would be helpful.
Sure. Yeah. I think I took business just because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And coming out of school, I actually built sheds for Rubbermaid, had a Rubbermaid branded truck and drove all over Northern Ontario building sheds at Home Depots. Freaking sucked, man. So I'd like build a shed. I remember there's a place around the corner called Schmooze, and I would like drive up to North Bay, like build sheds all day, drive home, change into a suit, and go to Schmooze for like $2.50 drinks. So I did that for like 2 years, got promoted to like marketing and eventually was running a P&L, which was like really, really cool. But at the same time, I was done at like 2:00. So I started to kind of start some of my own businesses. I had a shirt business because it's like cash flow positive. So you can like collect money for shirts and you don't got to mail them for like 6 weeks later. So you can kind of figure it out. And then a bunch of my buddies were in software, and like they would invite me for dinners and tell me all about like this cool stuff they were doing. So I ended up joining Salesforce. And the cool thing for me is I was running a P&L at Black & Decker, but like I was light years away from meeting the CEO at Black & Decker. And my first month at Salesforce selling to Stanley Black & Decker, I was in a room with the CEO and I was like, I'm hooked on software. Like this is cool because you can actually make an impact. And so I had a really cool 9-year run at Salesforce. And part of that was financial services was being built up, and we weren't quite an enterprise company. And part of the way we were going to become an enterprise company was like speak the language of customers. And one way to do that was to verticalize. So I had the JP Morgan Chase account. And it was just after Jamie Dimon in 2015 said like he'd never put data in the cloud. So it was like a tough slog, but we ended up doing, you know, our at the time, one of the biggest deals in Salesforce history there. And I just really found my niche in building teams that sell to the financial services. And so I had a great time at Plaid, where we met a couple of our advisors now and built some really good relationships, went to Slack. And then at the time, Slack was going to be tucked back into Salesforce, and started thinking about what I wanted to do. And like on my resume, it looks like such a big move. But because I was an advisor, and I like it's kind of like cheating because mm-hmm. I had a front row seat to like, you're like, we're about to close some massive deals with some really big customers. And like even just, you know, doing some interviews with those customers, the thing that I loved was how impactful, like the product worked. Mm-hmm. And that's half the battle. And so so I was fortunate enough that you invited me, but it was like, it wasn't as big a jump for me because I knew it worked, and I knew that I could feel really good about building the team to sell it. And what I've been excited about is like the customer success and the feedback we get is so important, especially when you're selling in financial services, because like nobody wants to be the first, but yeah. like nobody wants to be the last either, kind of thing. And so now we're in the US, like, you know, making a big impact on businesses there. It's nice to be back in New York on a regularly frequent basis. But like this will be awesome because I just love having conversations with executives, and a lot of the things that we're hearing from them are consistent. And it's important for us to be a thought leader. So, you know, hearing from other thought leaders is going to be wicked.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think there's a lot of transition away right now from like business as usual in wealth into a bunch of new, like there's a bunch of areas that are moving and shifting around in that space, I think, that's really going to change like the fundamental core of a lot of how wealth and asset management is going to get delivered to people. And being able to talk to clients and actually be on the really hear from them what their problems are, what competitors are doing, how they need to react to that. It's such a competitive market too, which is really fun and interesting for us because we get to work with people who, you know, almost feels like zero sum in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I think that if you look at challenges with things like organic growth, how do you grow your business in wealth management, not through acquisition? You know, inorganic growth, M&A has been record for like a number of years in a row, breaks the next record of the last year, which was the record forever. And so there's been some really interesting changes that I think are going to be fun to sort of chat through too and get people's point of view on as they're living and experiencing that and actually competing with each other.
Yeah, and like the cool thing is advisors are still the dominant channel, right? Like if you want to build wealth and if you want to have somebody help you do that, like the number one way to do it by 30x is using an advisor. And so I think the challenge now for a lot of people is like, how can you build that trust? How can you build that connection? How can you do that at scale? How can you recruit people? Like there's so much now that goes into delivering a really good experience. And it's really, really complicated. And I think like when we talk to executives, like their job is to pick winners, mm-hmm. right? And it's like there's a finite amount of resources, the problem's clearly defined, but like how do you push your chips into the middle, right? And bet on a winner. And I think, you know, the more info you have and the more credibility you feel behind that info, just the more it helps you make that decision confidently to push your chips in and make an impact.
Such a moving target too on wealth, because if you think about like the last, let's say like let's go for 40 years, but like really talk about sort of since 2000, but like in the 80s, it was just access to the market.
Well, enough. I remember the 80s.
Oh, I was born yet.
Right.
So, back in your teens.
yeah, it wasn't teens.
Don't let this fool you.
Just having access to the market was enough. Like that could qualify as a financial advisor. Just yeah. I can help you invest money. I can make your savings grow. And then 2000, the self-directed investor channels started to light up and ETFs were born. I know it feels like ETFs are brand new, but early 2000s they were born. And now suddenly access could be available to anybody. And so then the market had to react by saying, well, we can create custom portfolios for our clients. And that became the big dominant sort of change. But then there wasn't really a map towards how it's going to help you achieve your financial goal. And so then if you look at sort of in the 2010, 2015, all those robo-advisors showed up and then started shining legitimate holes on services provided by the industry. Say, you know, well, if you're just getting investments, if you're just getting a portfolio, you can do it cheaper here. Mm-hmm. And then the market reacted again by saying, well, let's get everybody into CRM to sort of be able to track all the needs of these clients and then get them into financial plans so that we actually have a map as to how the investments that they need to get into are going to map out to their future goal. And so now we're in a position which is almost the other side of where it was in the 80s, where customers can, in some circumstances, have more access to products than advisors. If you think about anything in crypto, all the NFT work that's going on, this decentralized finance is now giving people access to securities that advisors can't actually always provide advice on, or the regulations catching up now to help them provide advice. But it's something where almost the access is on the other side. And so now advisors really have to get back into building that relationship, focusing on the plan, focusing on the goals, and then fielding questions of all these different products that are out there and how the client needs to sort of look at different pieces and different elements. And values now are becoming a big part of the investment decision. Like, I think it's in a really interesting phase now where that value proposition to the customer needs to just take that next level up in order for people to continue to choose advice. They chose it instead of robo in the last 10 years or so. Now it's got to get to that next stage so they can continue to differentiate. So it's an exciting time in the industry where I think there's a ton of change coming. There's a lot of high consequence for people who get it right and for people who don't get it right.
Do you think that they'll like clip you talking about crypto and use that as the promo because so many people will watch then?
You know what? It's interesting. Crypto is like so hot, right? And we've been talking to advisors for a couple of years now about how you need to be ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
Even if you don't think it has any space in retirement, people watch the returns and their buddy gets it and they find out, you know, going for a drink or something like that. And somebody's made $10,000 and they're like, what about me?
Yeah.
Right. Investing is a huge FOMO experience too. So I'm sure we'll use it for a bit of clip.
Yeah. Cause I actually never know if I should mention crypto or not when I'm in a meeting. Like more as a joke, but I don't know. Oh boy, I tell you what, I would probably be remiss if we didn't have you talk a little bit about maybe your story of starting Capital and how you got here.
It's a great question, long story. I think, you know, everybody's got a unique upbringing.
Right.
My unique story is, my parents are world-renowned frailty experts, right. How else to say it. Okay. And so growing up in that household, imagine Sunday dinner was like super fun.
Yeah, I would love to see the frailty fans, like what that fandom looks like.
I think my dad's the most followed geriatrician on Twitter. So
that's sick.
Actually a real thing.
That's pretty sick. Yeah. No Insta?
No, I don't think. At K-Rock Doc, I'm pretty sure is what it is.
Sick shout out.
Yeah, it's amazing. But so that was my entire upbringing.
Yeah. It's good to handle K-Rock Doc.
It's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The whole thing. He has no idea about social media, but he's crushed it.
Yeah.
Which I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, no doubt.
So
should have him on.
That'd be amazing. Aging population, it's relevant.
Yeah, totally fair.
So start with that. You know, the cool thing about both my parents working in that space is like I knew that your work could make a difference in people's lives.
Is that how they met, by the way?
Long story short, yeah.
That's
in
wild.
Newfoundland.
Okay.
Yeah. My mom was doing her PhD, and my dad had gone back to school to become a doctor.
Sick.
And they met through all that. So
nice.
Yeah, but basically...
The Beyonce and Jay-Z of frailty.
That's exactly
it. Yeah, sick. Yeah.
They'd love that.
They love that, yeah.
They would absolutely love that, yeah. They work together, too. They co-author
Well, the Rock thing kind of works, too.
Yeah.
Right?
I never thought about it that way. Yeah. they'll love that. So, growing up, you know, with Jay-Z, Beyonce, Frailty, right. I found it like you can make a difference in the work you do. If you're really good at what you do, you can be autonomous. People kind of let you do your own thing. And you could commit your life to a problem you know you will never solve, right? Frailty will never be stopped, will never be completely fixed. It's something that will be mitigated. And you know kind of at the outset, you're not looking for a finish line. You're just looking to improve. And so I think through infinite Sunday dinners, did not want to do medicine. But I thought another role that could allow for autonomy, that could allow you to make a difference in the world, that could allow you to tackle a problem with no sort of finish line would be business. And so I always wanted to be a CEO. So from like, I can't remember a second in my life where I didn't want to be a CEO. I wanted to be CEO of McDonald's when I was like 5 because I loved Big Macs. Right. I remember my parents saying.
Right.
So it's just been like a lifelong obsession.
And we're exhausted with frailty.
Yeah. it was like, they didn't push me into it. They let me drop it in high school. Yeah. I was like, no more science. We're out of this. And so I started in, I did all that, I, you know, super excited. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to become an accountant. And so I took a bit of a left turn and wasn't very good at that. Below average rated auditor. But then shifted and went to investment banking, which I liked more. But then I was like, this isn't it. But the cool thing about both like financial services is you kind of operate outside of businesses. So you get to like see a bunch of different companies, whether it's like that laundry company I talked to you about earlier or not. Like it allows you to... It allows you essentially to see different types of businesses, see how they're run, but not actually have to be involved in each individual industry. And so then I got to a point in 2016 where I started to read a lot about robo-advice and all the legitimate holes they were shining and all the media coverage on the gaps in wealth and asset management and customer service. And I just thought, if there's this much pain in this really important industry, you know, that's going to help me make a difference in the world. Business, I've always thought, is an area that you're never going to win. Even if you look at massively successful companies, they're still having to deal with new problems. Success will just breed new problems, and the problems are bigger, and the problems can be things you've never guessed or would have anticipated. So it checked that box. And so I quit my job, didn't have a great plan, was initially going to create a company called, it's like hard to get through, but Bizarre Investment Market. Yeah. Which was like a Trivago for mutual funds and ETFs for self-directed investors.
Did you have a short form you were going to call it or anything?
Yeah, no, it wasn't I didn't get that far. It wasn't the best name ever. It was unique, and that was at least, you know, points.
And what, like, so did you actually, like, try and pitch it to people?
Yeah, so I started pitching it to financial advisors, and then they were like, can we use your software for our clients? And I was like, well, if there's issues with you doing it, then all these headlines make sense. And like, I'm going to go start to work with the wealth and asset management industry to help give them the technology. Because with wealth products being intangible, like if you don't have good tech, you can't serve your clients. You can't show them these things properly.
Yep.
And so started CapIntel. Shifted, and then I shifted 13 days after starting full-time. We found out enough about, okay, this first idea is just going to be really hard, but if there's a way to help the system, then we'll go for that.
So, you know what's wild actually listening to that is like there's so many wealth techs, but all the deployed technology is so old. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think there's so many people that say that they're a wealth tech and there's that fintech's popping up all the time, but like whenever we talk to people, they're using, you know, 25-year-old technology, like it's behemoth technology, but it's just old.
Yeah, it's a really good, I mean, sometimes things are almost so big that it's just impossible to see them. You know what I mean? And it's a thing where people just assume, oh, well, this is like core infrastructure is never going to change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's a big part of it. There's inertia. But I also think there's a lot of reactions that the market's had to do to changing investor appetites, which are like switching a bunch. And they also need to see like what's going to stick to a degree. And so I think that now with people focusing so much on growth, growing their businesses organically, that's like starting to shift the mindset around how do we work with these newer businesses. And I think as well, with all the infrastructure for startups that has changed, right, with like Amazon Web Services and Google Cloud allowing you to get super secure systems way faster for way cheaper than you ever could have before, you're able to be a secure system that can work with larger institutions faster. And so now you're just at the cusp of starting to see this transition. You know, if you look at those legacy businesses, they're 20, 25 years old or more, it's because they had that positioning, they had that security, they had a reputation already. And it was kind of like, you never get fired for buying IBM.
Right, right.
And so I think that's a big part of it. And now people are seeing like, okay, I leave a lot on the table if I don't start to partner with new firms. And so you're starting to see it shift a little bit more.
Right. So then what do you see then as the shift happening?
So I think now the shift that's happening is people are understanding that if I can't arm my advisors with sort of, there's two things going on, I think. First is compliance has become so heavy that it can't be its own activity. Like it needs to be embedded in other activities that you're doing, because if you just spend time on compliance, you're not talking to clients, you're not managing money, you're not growing your business.
Yep.
And so finding ways to embed compliance into like the selling process, for example, is like such a key trend that we're seeing and taking advantage of with CapIntel. But I also think you've got at the same time tons of pressure on and tons of changing clientele happening in the wealth management space. So you've got the great wealth transfer, which is boomer wealth going to their children. That's already happening.
Do we have a compliance guest, by the way? Is like somebody going to come talk about compliance, maybe? Should we do that?
Yeah, we probably get somebody really interesting.
Probably should. All right, I'm on it. Sorry.
You're your next target.
Yeah, totally.
So I think if we go from that, you've got compliance being such a big deal, and then you've got this massively changing demographic where you've had a client for 20 years, back to frailty, healthcare steps into the mix.
Yeah.
Somebody is no longer capable of managing their money. Suddenly, their kid is your client, and you have no goodwill, and you have no relationship built, and you've got to start from that. And that's just beginning to happen. That will continue to happen. That will happen more increasingly as boomers age, and as that massive amount of wealth starts to age and transition sooner than people necessarily had planned. And so I think that you're seeing this like changing demographic, you're seeing high levels of competition and a lot of pressure in the space. So now people are looking at growth technology to respond to these big trends happening.
Is ESG, like, so it's funny because I feel like ESG is provocative.
ESG can be provocative.
So what do you think about ESG? Like, what do you think, like, what should our people watching this kind of get out of our conversations with ESG? Is it for everybody or?
So ESG is, I think, a really interesting topic because what you're seeing now is brought more broadly, values or personal values are becoming a greater part of the investment decision. So not only is it just, okay, is it providing me X returns, but is it polluting our planet is going to be important for some people. Other people are going to want to have exposure to industries they like or industries that they support, so firearms and things like that. And so both of those are actually ESG metrics. And what I think ESG can broadly allow you to do is align values to investments. Beyond just E, which gets all of the attention, which is environmental, social, and governance. And so environmental component, that's like the big one. That's probably the most provocative. Social, I think, gets into a ton of different values, whether you go into, again, aligning with specific types of industries, be like nuclear power, you can get into it. Firearms, as well as religious values can be part of ESG scoring. And so what we're seeing today and our stance on it is, some clients you'll lose by bringing it up. Some clients you'll lose by not bringing it up. And so having access to it as a financial advisor And being able to have those conversations with clients is a must, because values, I think, are going to continue to creep into this and become more and more a key part of investments. And so whether you're using ESG to target, you know, environmentally friendly companies, or you're looking for it to target different values that your clients might have, these conversations are going to become more important. So ICSG is becoming another significant set of data that's going to come into this space. And being able to like launch with a partner like MSCI, what we did for the partnership, start bringing ESG in, we thought was really well timed to begin to allow advisors to have those conversations.
That's cool. Are you like super excited about anything coming up on the season?
I'm really excited for the guests that we've got lined up so far. I think there's some really impressive people that we've been able to get to come in, fly in for it, and actually sort of commit to sitting with us for an afternoon to walk through and talk about whether it's, you know, new products, whether it's trends in the industry, whether it's compliance, some ESG. I'm sure we'll have a discussion around. Right. These are all going to be really exciting to have as people start to join us.
And what's it going to take to get the show on the road?
I think the show's, well, good question. Large U.S. concentration.
All right. Okay.
Live from good. New York.
Sick. So I think I know my role now. It's to be the handsome sidekick. Maybe be provocative a little bit. Hard hitting questions.
Add some age to the podcast.
Yep. Yep. A little bit of age, some wisdom, experience, grade A numero uno experience.
You got the wisdom. I got the hair. We'll see you on the frontier.